Today's share in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara Yuma Daf Pei Beis. We're learning today Le'ili Nishmas Feni Deutsch, Chanabas Rav Yosef, Ignatz Deutsch, Yitzchak Ben Rav Yaakov, Imre Goldschmeid, Yosef Tzvi Ben Rav Chaim, and Rabbi Meir Shapiro, Harav Meir Ben Harav Yisachar Dov. We begin at the very top, Pei Beis Amud Aleph, right by the brand new Mishnah. There will be a handout in Yitzhak Hashem that I'll be attaching to today's share for those that want to try to follow along. The first Mishnah and the Gemara aren't complicated, but there are a lot of technical differences between the shitas that it might be easier to look at a table that I put together. I put together Baruch Hashem 4 or 5 cycles ago. Yitzhak Hashem still can use it today. So we begin the Mishnah, Hatinokos, young children. Now we'll see there are differences between boys and girls. This is based upon the halachic status that a boy only becomes a bar mitzvah at the age of 13 and a girl becomes bas mitzvah at the age of 12. They have the same halachic status as gedolim when they hit their respective bar and bas mitzvah respectively, but therefore everything in the Mishnah is going to be 1 year earlier for a girl versus a boy that's 1 year later. So the Mishnah tells us, Hatinokos, young children, Ein ma'anin osam biyom ha-kippurim. We do not force them to fast on Yom Kippur. As Top Rashi brings down, in chayovim limnoa mehem ma'echol. There is no obligation on the parents to stop their children from eating. And they're even allowed to go and feed them. Aval, we do at some point in time, at a certain age, mechanchin osam, we start to teach them to prepare themselves for fasting. Today happens to be a tainis. I'm dictating this on Shavasa Batamas, and it should be a day that eventually will be a day of Simcha for Klai Yisrael. Right now it's a terrible, sad day, and there's an obligation to be mechanech our children. The Tosos Yishonim brings down that this mitzvah chinuch applies as well to a daughter, even though there's a Gemara in Nazir that says that this doesn't apply to a daughter in terms of Naziris, but that's only in terms of the Naziris. Lo aire el adafko le'inya Naziris. Avovade le'inya shar mitzvos chayev l'chancha. The obligation to be mechanech a daughter is applicable as well. So therefore, these ideas of being mechanech a child, so it applies to a boy and a girl at their respective ages. Now, we are now going to say in the Mishnah that this applies lifnei shana v'lifnei shnosayim, before a year or two, before something, before they're becoming bar or bas mitzvah, or before actually it means the year before they're becoming bar or bas mitzvah, as we'll see as we unfold the Gemara. And the reason for this is b'shush yiregilim b'mitzvos, that they should become used to, accustomed to doing the mitzvos. Now, just some general terms we should understand. We call the age of bar and bas mitzvah the age of pirkon. The age that they've reached adult status is known as pirkon. So this is for a girl, obviously, at completion of her 12th year, and for a boy at the completion of his 13th year. So it's really, for the girl, it's the start of her 13th year. She's a full 12 years and 1 day. And for the boy, it's when he's a full 13 years and 1 day. So that's pirkon. Samuch lepirkon is the year before that. So for a girl, when she hits her 11th birthday, and for a boy, when he hits his 12th birthday. And what's called lifnei shana, which is the year smucha lepirkon. So that's going to be 1 year before 11 for a girl and 12 for a boy. And lifnei shtei shanim, smucha lepirkon, that's going to be 2 years before the age of samuch lepirkon. So it's going to be 3 years before this bas mitzvah and 3 years before the bar mitzvah. So for a girl, it'll be from 9, and for a boy, it'll be from 10. These facts are important, and you can see them outlined on the table that you'll see as the handout. Now we begin the Gemara. Gemara tells us, doesn't make sense that you tell us a year or two. Lifnei shana v'lifnei shnosayim. Hashta b'fnei shtayim mechanchen luhu. If we have to start educating them and teaching them to begin to fast on these days, so then if you have to do it 2 years beforehand, so certainly you have to do it 1 year beforehand. What does it make any sense to say lifnei shana, lifnei shtei shanim? That doesn't make any sense. So therefore, the Gemara tells us, bifnei shana mibayi, if you're telling me bifnei shtayim mechan chelu, bifnei shana mibayi, you have to tell me 1 year? So yes, Rav Chisda tells us there is a chiddush here. Amar Rav Chisda depends on the child, lo kasha. The year that you do it only 1 year before, that's dealing with a sickly child, ha b'chole, chole or chola, boy or girl. And that which we say 2 years beforehand, that's habibari, that's for a healthy child, and that's what I put down, and you'll see on the attachment, that I sometimes break it up into what the din would be for a healthy child versus a sickly child. So a sickly child is always 1 year later than for a healthy child at each respective stage. Nadigmar tells us there are other shitas. This was Rav Chisda's shita. We're going to have 3 other shitas that are brought down. Amar Rav Huna. Rav Huna tells us, ben shmona uven teisha mechanchen osan l'shos. An 8-year-old or a 9-year-old, according to Rav Huna, we'll see that this is talking only about girls. This is not talking about boys. He's only talking about girls. He doesn't mention boys. So an 8-year-old girl or a 9-year-old girl, so then we have to begin to be mechanchin oso l'shos. We have to start training them for a small period of time, for shows, for a couple of hours that they should fast. Once they hit older than that, ben eser or ben achasesre, when they hit 10 and 11, so then mashlimim midrabanan. They have to go and complete that tainus based upon a din derabanan, not on din deraisa. And when they hit 12, then they're a bas yisrael, they're bas mitzvah, ben shtemisre, mashlimim midrabanan. Then they have to go and fast on a deraisa level. And this is bitinokis. As I mentioned, this is only by girls. So let's just quickly remind ourselves what this means. And you can see this on my diagram, the handout as well, in the table. So Rav Huna tells us that it's either 8 or 9. So this would be 8 for a healthy girl and 9 for a sickly girl. And that is that we start to be mechanchen them in regards to a couple of hours. As we'll see, if they're used to fasting, eating at 2 hours in today, so we make them eat at 3 hours in today, something like that. We push it back a little bit. So if they're just learning for hours, so then a healthy child, 8-year-old girl, if it's a sickly child, so then 9-year-olds, we start teaching them mechanchen lo l'shos. When they already have to go and complete the fast, midrabanan, that, according to Rav Huna, is for a 10-year-old girl if she's healthy, or an 11-year-old girl if they're sickly. And there's no difference, Rashi points out, between a bari or a sickly child, whether you're healthy or you're not. Once you hit bas mitzvah, again, unless it's, of course, pikuach nefashos, unless there's some medical reason not to, so then even a sickly child is supposed to fast, assuming that they're capable of doing so, even though it's difficult for them. And that's both for a healthy or a sickly child when they hit the age of bas mitzvah. That is the shita of Rav Huna. Now we have the shita of Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman Amar, he's only talking about boys. He doesn't discuss girls. And Rav Nachman tells us the exact same idea. Ben Teisha, Ben Esem, Mechanchen Oson L'shos. For a boy, when they hit 9 or 10, again, 9 for a healthy boy, 10 for a sickly child, so then we have to teach them to fast for a couple of hours, more than they normally would eat breakfast, so we delayed their breakfast a little bit. When they reach Ben Achasesre, Ben Shtemisre, when an 11-year-old healthy boy, or if it's a 12-year-old boy, when they're sickly, so then Mashlimim Midrabanan, then they have to complete the fast on the Rabbanan level. And when they hit Ben Shloshesre, so then Mashlimim Deraisa, when the child becomes Bar Mitzvah, so then he is a Bar Yisrael, and therefore he has to go fast. This is true whether they're healthy or sickly, again, assuming there's no Pikuach Lefashos and no medical concerns. That's the opinion of Rav Nachman. So Rav Huna and Rav Nachman are very similar. They are opposites in that one is talking, Rav Huna, about girls, and Rav Nachman is talking about boys. And then finally, we have the final opinion. That's Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan, Omar, Rav Yochanan says, Hashlomo d'Rabbanan Lekka. He doesn't agree with either of the opinions brought down beforehand, that there is a concept that you finish off the fast, mid-Rabbanan, that you have to fast the whole day. He doesn't hold from that. Ella, what does Rabbi Yochanan say? Ben Eser, Ben Achasesre. He's also talking about girls over here. He doesn't discuss boys. He says when a girl who's healthy hits 10 years old, if she's not healthy when she hits 11 years old, so then you have to go Ben Eser, Ben Achasesre, Mechan Chanosol Shos. Only at that point in time do we have some education, do we start telling them to delay their breakfast a little bit. And when they hit 12, Ben Shtemisre, Mashlimim Deraisa. Then, again, assuming there's no medical problems, so then certainly not Pikuach Nefashos, so then whether they're healthy or they're sickly, they have to start fasting when they reach 12 and one day, when they reach Bas Mitzvah. Now, those are the four shitas that we have over here, and now we're going to ask on these shitas from our Mishnah. Tonight, we're learning our Mishnah. It says, Hatinokos, children, Ein Ma'aninosom B'Yom HaKippurim. We don't force them to fast in Yom Kippur, except we do start educating them, we start being Mechanech them, Avo Mechanech Nosom, Lifnei Shona V'Lifnei Shtayim. We actually have the Mishnah Lifnei Shinosayim. In any event, we have to go and begin to educate them, and they eat breakfast a little bit later than they normally would. Now, that's what we learned in our Mishnah. Now, this works out very, very well, according to both Rav Huna and Rav Nachman. Bishlom, Rav Huna, Rav Nachman, the two shitas that we said, by Rav Huna, by girls, or Rav Nachman, by boys, because when it says Lifnei Shana and Lifnei Shinosayim, it means Lifnei Shana V'Lifnei Shtayim, Lifnei Shana L'Divrehem. The year before, they have to start fasting midrabanan. So it works out very, very well. That first year, according to Rav Huna, which was 8 for a healthy girl, 9 for a sickly girl, that's now the year that you do the shows, and that's lifnei shana asayim, that's lifnei divreihem, which is the rabanan, and lifnei shtayim, which should be, instead of the divreihem, it should be the divrei Torah, as it's changed by the Bach. So it makes very good sense. Rav Huna's shita is that there are three separate positions. The mechanchin shows that's the year before they reach the din, the rabbanon of mashlimim, and 2 years before they reach the din of mashlimim in haTorah. So Rav Huna makes very good sense. And similarly, Rav Nachman makes very good sense, the same exact thing. When it says the shows for the boy from 10 or 9, depending on whether they're healthy or sickly, the 9-year-old boy when he's healthy, the 10-year-old boy when he's sickly, that's lifnei shana, before 1 year, before he's mashlimim, that's the divrayim. And it's 2 years before mashlimim in haTorah. So they both work out very well. Rav Huna and Rav Nachman seem to accord very well with our Mishnah. And you can see this again in the handout that I gave you if you want to see this box nice and clearly. However, the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan, we got a problem, Kasha, because what's this Lifnei Shana, Lifnei Shasnayim? He doesn't have that. He doesn't have this din of Mashlimin Midrabbanan. So how do you work that out? So Gemara says, Amaloch Rabbi Yochanan would say that the Mishnah is telling us as follows, Mai Shana Oshtayim. When the Mishnah says that it's a Shana Oshtayim, it means Samuch Lepirkon. It means prior to the year that they become a Bar and Bas Mitzvah. And therefore, for the healthy girl, it's at the age of 10. For the sickly girl, it's the age of 11. That's the year or two before their Bas Mitzvah. So it works out very well. And in fact, in Shulchan Aruch, we pass it over here like the Shita of Rabbi Yochanan. There is no real concept of mashlimim midrabanan for a girl by a regular tainis, and we start to be mechanach them in the year before their bas mitzvah if they're not so healthy. And today most children are considered not being healthy, so therefore they all have the status of being weaker, and that's usually the custom that is followed. So that was in accord with Rav Huna and Rav Nachman, and we had to explain why it was also in accord with Rav Yochanan, and now we have the opposite. Now we have a braisa that seems to go against Rav Huna and Rav Nachman. Toshma, the braisa tells us, the Tani Rabba Bar Shmuel, the Rabba Bar Shmuel learned the following. It says, Tinokos, Ein Ma'ananos Sombi Yom Kippur. And like our Mishnah, it says that you're not mechayev to prevent children from eating on Yom Kippur. But, Avo Mechanchnoson, Shana Oshtayim, Samuch Lepirkon. It says that you have to go and be mechanachtim a year or two, Samuch Lepirkon. That's the year before they become Bar and Bas Mitzvah. Now, Bishlomo Rav Yochanan Nichat, that works out very, very well according to Rav Yochanan. He says that means 1 year for a sickly child and 2 years for a healthy child, Shana or Shnasayim, Samuch Lepirkon. But, El Rav Huna, El Rav Nachman, Kasha, what exactly does that mean, Samuch Lepirkon? Seems to get rid of that extra year that they have added previously. So they would answer, Amiloch Rabbanon, these Rabbanon, Rav Huna and Rav Nachman would answer, Mai Chinuch Nami Diktane Hashlama. That which it says over here in this Braisa, that you mechanach them, it doesn't mean Lashos. It means that's the actual Mashlimim, the Rabbanon. And therefore, the numbers work out correctly according to this. That it'll be 1 year for a Chola and 2 years for a Bari. And therefore, it works out well according to them. But according to this answer, we're explaining that chinuch means hashlama, that you have to finish it off. So the Gemara asks, is that really true? Or mi kari lechinuch hashlama? Do we call beginning to educate them, to teach them, is that called completing it? Really? Well, Tanya, we learned in another braisa, what is the definition of chinuch? Eze chinuch hayorogil lechol b'shtei shos. If they normally have breakfast at 2 hours in the day, so machilin also l'shosh, then they would have breakfast an hour later. If they normally have breakfast b'shalosh, they normally have breakfast at 3 hours in the day, so machilin also miarba. So you delay it an hour. So therefore, that's what chinuch means. It doesn't mean hashlama. So how can you tell me it means hashlama? So no, it does. Amar Rava Barula, trei chinuch yehavu. There are two types of chinuch. There's a chinuch for shos, and the chinuch the rabbanon mashlimim. And they would hold that this means the chinuch of mashlimim. And this way, everybody is in accord with the Braisa, and everybody is in accord with the Mishnah. As I mentioned, we paskin like Rabbi Yochanan. That's it for the handout. Now we go on to the next Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us, Ubra Sheiricha. Here we start getting into a lot of the medical halachic issues that this last perek of Yuma is noted for. So it tells us if a pregnant woman who is at risk of losing Rachmana Lislan, her life, or her baby, smells something and doesn't eat from it, now it's on Yom Kippur, you're not allowed to eat. So this is putting into a situation of Pikuach Nefashos. Rashi says, who is the one that's smelling this? Rashi has an unbelievable sheet here. Rashi says, "Ho uber meriach reach tavshil," that it's the uber that's actually smelling this aromatic food. The who, it's the uber that's misadalo that wants this. Then ena ocheles shnei misuchanim. And if you don't give it to the mother, so then not only will the baby be at risk, but the mother will be at risk as well. Now, this is, again, a little bit of an unusual shita. And brought down in Shulchan Aruch, it's talking about the mother smells it, not like Rashi says over here. But the Shaar HaTzion says that Rashi is talking about if the fetus is more than 40 days old, so it's really as if the mother is smelling it with the fetus. And therefore, if you're dealing with a fetus that's 40 days old, that has the ability, so to say, to smell, and it's affected and impacted by what the mother smells. In any event, the Mishnah tells us that in this situation, where the mother's life is at risk, then of course you're allowed to feed her until she feels better. And we'll see, that just it depends. If you give her something, or even whisper in her ear and say, it's Yom Kippur, and do you really need this? And she says, no, I can get by without it, so then you don't have to give it to her. We do pachos, we always do as little amount as you have to, but the bottom line is, she says, I don't feel well, and if I don't eat, I'm going to be in a lot of trouble, so machilin oso acha toshib nafsha. We give her as much food as she needs to restore her health. Likewise, chola, if you have a sick person, so machilin oso al pi bekiim, you're allowed to go feed a sick person who's on your kippur, is in need of food. So if the experts, the bekiim, say that this person needs food, so then you give the person food. Then ain shom bekiim, if there are no experts over there, so what do? Then you even listen to the person. Machilin oso al piatzmo, if this person says, I'm sick, we'll see in the Gemara, that we listen to him even against the advice of the doctors. Even if the doctors say he doesn't need to eat, but if this person says, I need to eat, because we have the principle that Yodei Oda Moris Navsho, every person knows themselves better than anybody else. So if this sick person says, I need to eat, even if there are no experts around, and as I mentioned, even if there are experts around that disagree with him, we'll feed this person. Machilin oso al piatzmo, until this person says, enough, okay, Baruch Hashem, I feel better now, I don't need to eat or drink anymore. And this is halacha lemaisa. If a sick person on Yom Kippur says, I need to eat or drink, even if every doctor says, no, he doesn't need to eat or drink, he'll be fine, we give the sick person to eat and drink. Gemara starts and says, Tana Rabbanon, Ubro Sheiricha Bisar Kodesh, if a pregnant woman smells sacrificial fats, sacrificial meats, so she's not allowed to go and eat these things, she's only allowed to eat those korbanos that she's allowed to. So you're dealing here with korbanos that she's not allowed to eat. For example, an ola, which nobody's allowed to eat. Or other korbanos that only the pirchei kohuna, a chatas or noshim, only the male kohanim are allowed to eat those korbanos. There are other korbanos that the family of kohen can eat. So here we're dealing with a pregnant woman smells basar kodesh, which she is not allowed to eat, but she has a taiva for it. Or likewise, obasar chazir. The neighbor is making a barbecue of pork. And she smells this delicious barbecue and she says, oh, I need to eat this or else I'm going to miscarry, or else I'm going to be in a lot of trouble. So then, what do we do in this situation? Again, we have this principle, we do as little as possible, at the minimal amount that we have to be over in Isser, we do. So in this situation, she can't be mollified by saying that's carbon meat and you're not allowed to eat it. And she's not mollified by saying it's treif meat and you're not allowed to eat it. So therefore, in this situation, tochavim lo kush, you stick a little bit of a needle-like thing, a kush is a spindle, and you put that into the rotav, into the gravy over here of this either sacrificial meat that she's not allowed to eat, or the treifa meat, the non-kosher meat, the basar chazir that she's not allowed to eat, or menlichin lo apia, and you place this on her mouth, and she can ingest a little bit of this taste. The taste is better than the actual basar. That's less of an isser to have the taste over here of the gravy that doesn't have the mamashes to it. It's still awesome in the araisa, but it doesn't have the same mamashes to it, so we give her a little bit of the gravy first. Nu, im nisyai shvadata mutav. Great. If that satisfies her, and she's no longer desperate for this sacrificial meat or the basar chazir, so then, in that situation, Baruch Hashem, we're done. But if it doesn't satisfy her craving, she has this craving and it's going to cause her to get sick, so then, machilin osa rotav atzma, then you actually give her some of the gravy itself. Before we gave her the stick, the kush, that was dipped into the gravy, now you actually give her a little piece of the gravy itself. And if that does the trick, fine. But if it doesn't, in lav, machilin osa shuman atzma, then you actually give her the actual shuman. The shuman here means the meat, the fat, the actual Isser item of the Basar Kodesh or the Basar Chazir. Why? Famous, important principle. The Gemara tells us that you must know this principle. It's Bikuach Nefashos. And Shulchan Aruch has brought down this is an obligation of the Rav. The first week he's in Shul to go really tell the congregation that Pikuach Nefesh is Docha Shabbos. It says it's a terrible thing if a person has to go and ask the rabbi on Shabbos when Nebuchadnezzar is having a heart attack, rabbi, are we allowed to call out Tzol or not? So it says that something happens to that person, so it's the rabbi's fault that he didn't teach everybody, of course, for Safik Pikuach Nefashos, never mind Vadei Pikuach Nefashos, but even if there's a doubt that it can be Pikuach Nefashos, so important to tell the congregation beforehand that your Mechal Shabbos, even for a Safik Pikuach Nefashos. Now, almost nowhere more did we see this concept of being machmir for Safek Pikuach Nefashos in our lifetimes than we have for this year of COVID, where so many things which are part of our ritual, part of our life, going to shul, davening with a minion, all of these things, so they're pushed aside for Safek Pikuach Nefashos, even if there's a chance that it could be dangerous. And that's the Gemara telling us, She'ein lecha davar she'omei b'pnei pikuach nefesh. There is nothing that stands in the way of saving a Jewish life. The Gemara elsewhere gives many, many reasons. We'll see this in a few days on dalet.pehei. So it's going to tell us many, many reasons why that Pikuach Nefashos is docho kol mitzvos kula, with the exception of the three cardinal sins, chutz mi'avodah zarah, rachmono litzlan. If somebody tells you to go desecrate God's name by worshiping avodah zarah, or else he'll kill you, so you have to give up your life. Megillah Arayis, if somebody tells you to have prohibited relations with a woman that's erva to you, otherwise they will kill you, so you have to give up your life. And Shrichas Dom, if somebody says, go kill Yankel, or else I'm going to kill you, so then you also have to give up your life. With the exception of these three, what are called the three cardinal sins, of Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayis, and Shrichas Domim, so every other Isser in the Torah, you're allowed to be B'chal Shabbos, you can eat Treifus, all these very, very severe Isserim, they're pushed aside in order to observe the tremendously important idea of a Chai B'hem, that we should live by the Torah and not die by the Torah. So this is the din of Ein l'chadova omei b'pnei pikuach nefashos, except for the three cardinal sins. Now, how do we know that these three cardinal sins are also not pushed aside by pikuach nefashos? After all, one can make the argument, v'chai b'hem, even the three cardinal sins should be pushed aside. So the Gemara tells us, what does Rami know? How do we know? And if somebody says, either worship this idol or I'm going to kill you, you have to say, no, shoot. What does Rami know? And so the Tanya, because we learn in the Brisa, Rabbi Eliezer tells us, we say this every day in the Shema, that you have to ace Hashem l'kech v'chol l'vavacha, v'chol nafshecha, v'chol miyodecha. Now, if it tells us in Nehemiah, v'chol nafshecha, if you have to give up your life for, you have to ace Hashem l'kecha. Now, that is the example of not doing Avodah Zarah. You should love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it means you will not do Avodah Zarah. So it means you have to give up b'chol nafshecha or b'chol miyodecha. So why does that tell us both of them? So im ne'emar b'chol nafshecha, lama ne'emar b'chol miyodecha. If you have to give up your life, of course you have to give up your wallet. Im ne'emar b'chol miyodecha. And if you have to give up your wallet, so certainly, why would you have to tell me lama ne'emar b'chol nafshecha? So this is for two different types of people. Most people would fall into this category, that their life is worth more than their wallet. Their life is worth more than their possessions. So if somebody comes up to you and says, listen, I'm going to kill you unless you give me your wallet. Say, here, take my wallet, but just don't kill me. So most people are like that. And therefore, if his life is worth more than his money, you have to even be willing, for such a person whose life is worth more than his money, and the guy is coming to him and says, listen, you either bow down to this side or I'm going to kill you, so then you have to let him kill you. Your life, even though it's worth more than your money, is not worth more than avodah zarah. Guy, when the robber comes up to him and says, your money, your life, he says, let me think about it. Okay, you know, you can kill me, but I'm not giving you my ATM card. So then, for such a person, a crazy person, but for such a person, you need the pasuk to tell me, that even for that crazy person, for Avodah Zarah, he has to give up his ATM card, he has to give up his bank account. He's not allowed to go and worship Avodah Zarah, even though he normally holds that the ATM card is worth more than his life, but it can't be worth more than V'yahatas Hashem Lokecha, V'chol Avavacha, V'chol Nafshecha, V'chol Miyodecha. So this is the source that Avodah Zarah is not pushed aside by Pikuach Nefashos. Okay, that's great, Avodah Zarah. What about Gilui Arayis, Shichas Domim, Minor Lon? How do we know that for Gilui Arayis to commit an immoral act or to kill somebody that's also not pushed aside because of Pikuach Nefashos? So here we have another Brisa, the Tanya. This Brisa tells us, Rabbi Omer, the great Rebbe the Nasi tells us, now the whole pasuk goes as follows. It says, La Nara, it's talking here about Anara Murasa, Lo Sasa Dovev, she's Rachman al Islan raped out in the wilderness, so then she's not held at all accountable. It's not her fault. What was she supposed to do? She couldn't fight off the guy, and there was nobody there when she yelled to go and help her. So Ein La Nara Chait Mavis. There is certainly no responsibility, there's no punishment for this Nara Murasa, Rachman al Islan is raped. Then the pasuk compares, this is the Hekish, and this is where Agamar picks up. Ki kasher yokum ish arayehu uritzachu nefesh. Just like when a man goes up against another man and he kills him, the first man was trying to kill him or somebody else, and he goes and kills that murderer instead, so then Kena Devorzeh, this is comparable. These two cases of the Namuros and the person going and killing a Rotzeach, who is trying to kill somebody else, so these two dinim are the same. In what way are they the same? So Gemara says, V'chi ma inyan lamadnu, what are we learning over here? Me Rotzeach l'naru murasa, the pasuk is comparing the two things. Ella, hare zeh bo l'lamed, it's actually coming to teach us a din, but it's also going the other way as well, v'nimtso lamed. So we're learning both. We're learning from the Rotzeach to the Nar Murasa, but we're also learning from the Nar Murasa to the Rotzeach. What exactly is this? Ma Nara Murasa Nitan Lahatzila Benavsho. Just like when it tells us that the Nara Murasa is allowed to, she's not held accountable at all, because what could she do? There was nobody there to help her. The implication of that is, if there was somebody there to help her, the guy's allowed to go kill this rapist. Ma Nara Murasa Nitan Lahatzila Benavsho. She is allowed to go and be saved, even though the only way you can save him is to shoot the rapist. He's coming at you with his knife, and the only way you can stop him is if you shoot him. You're allowed to shoot him. So too, af rotzeach. So too, by the rotzeach. Now we have the word v'chuli over here. The Mesoros Hashas says that the word v'chuli doesn't apply here, and it should be nitan lahatzilo benafsho. You're allowed to go and kill this rapist who was trying to go and attack this young lady. So af rotzeach, nitan lahatzilo benafsho. So the same exact halacha applies as well to a rotzeach. If a rotzeach is trying to murder Reuven, is trying to kill Shimon, so Levi's allowed to come along and kill Reuven. So that's what we learn from the Naru Rasa. We actually learn out to the rotzeach. And likewise, we learn out the other way as well. Ma rotzeach, if somebody comes up to you and says, you either kill Yankel or I'm going to kill you, so the halacha is, Yehoreg v'al yavor, you have to say, I'm sorry, I'm not going to kill Yankel, you're going to kill me, but I'm not going to kill Yankel. So too, af naru hamurasa, Yehoreg v'al yavor. So too, if a person comes up to you and says, listen, you either have relations with this naru hamurasa, or else I'm going to go and kill you, so then the person has to say, Yehoreg, kill me, v'al yavor, I'm not going to go and have relations with this naru hamurasa. So we learn both over here, the rotzeach to the naru hamurasa, and we learn from the naru hamurasa to the rotzeach. Now, Tosos is a very long Tosos here. It looks like it's shorter, relatively short on our side, but it goes the entire Amud Beis, which we'll see is a very short Amud Beis. So Tosos goes into a lot of these dinim. First of all, he compares and brings down that how was Esther allowed to go and commit adultery? She was married to Mordechai. How was she allowed to commit adultery with Ahasuerus? So the famous Gemara there says that Esther, the Farhes Yahavai, how was she allowed to do this? It was in public. Now, the answer to that is, was Esther Kakolim. She was passive. And a woman, Rahman of Islam, when she's being raped, she's not doing anything. She is Nebuch being raped, but she's not physically participating in any way. Therefore, the din by a woman is different. And even with Ahesya, she's allowed to, unfortunately, let herself get raped rather than saying, no, you have to kill me, rather than be raped. As opposed to a man, or even if a woman were to actively participate, so then the din is Yehoreg v'yavor. We're not going to go through this whole Tosos. It's very long. It would take us a long time to go through this Tosos. But in any event, there are many, many important dinim here in this Tosos in regards to this concept of Yehoreg v'yavor. In any event, the Gemara now continues. We turn to Pebeiz Amud Beiz, Rotzeach Gufei Min Olon. So you're telling me that we learned from Rotzeach that just like you're not allowed to go and kill somebody else, and you have to let them kill you, so we learned that out to an Amurasa. You're not allowed to go have relations with an Amurasa. You're supposed to let them kill you. Now, how do we know this by Rotzeach? Rotzeach, Gufi Minolon. When somebody comes up to you and says, listen, you either kill Yankel, or I'm going to kill you, so why doesn't Pikuach Mefashos come into play and say, listen, I don't want to die. I'll kill Yankel. That's the only way I can survive. Why is that not the case? Rotzeach, Gufi Minolon. Why can't the person kill Yankel if he's told, I'll kill you, unless you kill Yankel? So, Svarihi, it's all based upon logic. The how the Osul Kamedi Rava, the once Nebuch was a situation, this is not unfortunately an uncommon situation that we've had through our difficult history of living amongst our persecutors and amongst the Goyim. The how the Osul Kamedi Rava, there was a person who came in front of Rava, and Amalei told Rava the following tragic story. Amalei Mari Duroi, the head guy in my area, the person in charge of my town, Mari Duroi, he said to me, either kill Katle Leplanya, go kill Reuven, Ve'ilo, and if you don't kill Reuven, Katilna Loch, I will kill you. So the choice is, you either kill somebody, or you're going to be killed. Amalei, so Rabbi said to this person, who never asked him this horrible kasha, and he said to him, Niktaloch, you have to let yourself be killed. Why? Velo Tikto, you can't go kill Reuven, because who says, my chaz is the domo didoch, sumak tvei. There's a famous statement. Who says your blood is redder than his blood? In other words, one of you two is going to die over here. You have to let HaKadosh Baruch Hu do that. You can't get involved and say, well, I'm redder than him. I deserve more to live than him, and therefore I'm going to, permissible for me to go kill Reuven in order to save my life? No. A person is not allowed to do that. And they have to say, I'm not going to go kill Reuven. I don't have to commit suicide, but you're going to go and kill me. I'm not going to go kill Reuven. And therefore, he, in fact, in this situation, is Yehari Yafa, because my chazis, the domo didoch sumach tvei, who says Reuven's blood is less red than my blood? Dilma domoch the hau gavra sumach tvei. Maybe his blood is redder than mine. In other words, in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's eyes, that person is more important than me. Maybe yes, maybe no. Therefore, I don't have the right to go take his life. Tosus does point out that in this situation, if they were to drop you on a baby, for example, they give that example, they said to this person, either you let us drop you on the baby, if you fight us off, then we're going to go and kill you. So then the person, since he's passive, it's like Esther Karka Olam, if he's not doing anything, he's not mechuyev to struggle in that situation and prevent them from killing the baby. So in that situation, he's passive, but he's not allowed to do anything active. And that's the din of Yehareg v'al Yavar. Rachmana Litzlan, we've seen famous tshuvas about this. There's a famous tshuva from the Radvaz that's used for evaluating risk-taking in halacha, in medicine. And that the Radvaz was asked Nebuch by a person that the Sultan came to this person and said, either you let me cut off your finger or I'm going to kill Yanko. So here it wasn't, you kill Yanko or else we're going to kill you. Here it was, either you let us cut off your finger or else we're going to kill Yanko. And in that situation, it's a different calculation. What is the likelihood of this person dying from losing his finger? So that's what the Radvaz discusses and says that if the risk of losing your life is less, so then under certain situations, you have to take this certain risk, not necessarily cutting off your finger. He says if the person wishes to, they're considered a righteous person, a tremendous mitzvah that you did, but you're not necessarily obligated to do so because you're going to be suffering and there is even a risk of death here. But in other situations, a person has to weigh very carefully. That's the lasha that the Mishnah Berurah, the Aruch HaShulchan, Shulchan Aruch HaRav all say, that you weigh it in a balance scale, how much risk a person should be taking or not to save somebody else's life. You see a bunch of thugs going to attack somebody and you walk up to them and say, hey, stop attacking them, they'll kill him and they'll kill you. But if you could throw a life preserver to somebody and you don't, so then you have a problem. Why did you do that? You can't argue, well, I might have thrown out my shoulder and then I'll go to the hospital and they'll give me an injection and I'll die from the injection. So that's far-fetched. The person has to always weigh and balance out how much risk there is. Again, this is much more of a complicated sugya than I can go through right now, but this is the basis. This idea is the basis for many, many difficult medical halachic decisions in terms of risk-taking. Can you donate your kidney? Can you donate a part of your liver, etc., to somebody else to save somebody else's life? Now the Gemara continues and says, Hahi Ubra, there once was a pregnant woman, the Orchod, she smelled some food on Yom Kippur and had a tremendous time for it. Now, of course, on Yom Kippur, you're not allowed to eat. Now, even pregnant women are obligated to fast in general on Yom Kippur, unless there's a specific reason that says they're not to. The default is that a pregnant woman fasts, but there are many a terem that a pregnant woman, under certain situations, will not have to fast even on Yom Kippur. Now, this situation arose, Hahi Ubra, the Orchod, and they came to Paskin the Shiloh, also coming to the Rebbe. They came to Rebbe. So what did Rebbe do? Amalu, Rebbe said to the people, Zilu l'choshulah, go and whisper into this pregnant lady's ears, the Yoma de Kippurihu, remind her that Yom Kippur, she mimstama, forgot because of her craving, that maybe that she forgot that it's Yom Kippur. So they did that. L'choshulah, they whispered into her ear that it's Yom Kippur, vilchisha, and she accepted this. She understood, as Rashi says, kibla es halachisha, she accepted this whispering in her ear, and this somehow stopped, like Rashi says, that it was the baby inside that was having this taiva. So by whispering into her ear, it so to say transmitted to the baby inside of her that it's Yom Kippur and you shouldn't be having this taiva. And it quieted down the baby, it quieted down the woman, and she didn't have to eat anything. The Rebbe was so impressed with this woman. Kari Alei, Rebbe said about this woman, B'terem etzarcha b'betin yedaticha v'gomer. This is the famous statement that Yirmiyah Navi was designated to be a Navi, even in the belly of his mother. So therefore, this woman also was going to have a great child. And Nofach Minah, who came out of this woman, who was the child that was inside her at this time? Rabbi Yochanan, the great, great Rabbi Yochanan. Unfortunately, a similar incident occurred where it wasn't such a good outcome. How Ubra, the Orcha, there was another situation where a pregnant woman smelled something on Yom Kippur and had a tremendous craving for this, and of course you're not allowed to eat on Yom Kippur. So here, they asked Rabbi Chanina, also coming to Rabbi Chanina, they asked Rabbi Chanina, what should they do? So he told them the same thing. Amalahu says, go and whisper to the woman, this is not Loch Lebaisa, except if it's Mikuach Lepashos. If somebody is diabetic and they're in insulin shock, they're in a hypoglycemic state, you don't go start whispering to them, it's Yom Kippur. You give them IV infusion, you give them orange juice, etc. You take care of it. But here we're talking about it wasn't life-threatening at that moment. So you had the opportunity to whisper into the woman's ear that it's Yom Kippur. So that's what Rabbi Chanina told them. Amalu l'chu shula, go and whisper to her it's Yom Kippur, and maybe that will be misyashiv da'ita. But below Ilchisha, she didn't have Yisuvi Adas, she didn't get comforted, she still had the craving, and they obviously had to feed her. Now, what turned out with this baby? So Kari Alei, Rabbi Chanina said about this child that would be born to this woman, so we turn to Pei Gimel Amud Aleph, he said about this child, Zoru Rishoyim Meirochem. Sometimes, Nebuch, you can see the evil, the wickedness of a child, even in the womb. Now, this child obviously wasn't wicked, but it's saying this is going to portend poorly for this child growing up. And in fact, this child turned out to be a Rasha. Nofak minor shabsai otza peri. The child that was born from here was a person who was a price fixer, a price gouger, known as shabsai otza peri. It is forbidden for a person to go and like corner the market on some sort of a produce and this way raise the prices. So he'll buy all the coffee futures. And this way, nobody else will be able to buy coffee and the prices will rise because they're so rare. And he's dishing out a little bit of coffee at a time to maintain the high prices. So that's wrong. That, as Rashi points out, it's to go and artificially impact the prices. You're not allowed to do that. In Otsrim Peros Eretz Yisrael, you're not allowed to go gather all the grapes, gather all the tefuah in Eretz Yisrael. Because these are chayi nefesh, these are things that are essential for a person to have. Flavishim avkina sasharb. And this collection of this will cause the price by your supply and demand to go and change. So this is a wicked person. And that's what the Shabtai Otsa Peri was. And Rabbi Chanina was able to tell that Nebuch, this didn't portend well, that this pregnant woman wasn't able to control herself. And again, like Rashi says, that baby inside wasn't able to control himself, even though he was whispered that it was Yom Kippur. We'll go a little bit weiter. We learned in the Mishnah, Chole, Machilin, Oso, Alpi, Bekiyin, that a sick person, we're allowed to go and feed them if the experts say that you're allowed to. Now that implies, Omer of Yanai, Chole, Omer Tzarech, if the sick person says, I need it, Virofi, Omer Eino Tzarech, and the doctor says you don't need it, Shomim Lachole. Nevertheless, we still listen to the sick person. As I pointed out in the Mishnah, this is where I got it from this Gemara. Very, very important idea that we listen to the sick person more than we do to the doctor when the sick person says, I need to eat, and the doctor says, no, it's okay. Why not? Why don't we listen to the doctor? We normally do. My time up, because Lev Yodea Moras Nafsho, because a sick person knows better. The doctor can say, in general, people like this don't need it from your vital signs, from your overall condition, it doesn't look like you need it. However, he doesn't know the inside of this person. The person himself, the sick person, knows his insides, and he says, Lev Yodea Moras Nafsho, I know how sick I am. The doctor may not be able to tell that. Gemara says, Pshita, why does Rav Yanai have to tell us this? Isn't it obvious? The sick person clearly knows himself better. Gemara says, not necessarily so. Mal detema, I might have thought on my own. Rofe kim letve, I would say the doctor knows better. So the doctor knows better in terms of saying that he definitely does have to eat. And then even if the sick person says, I don't feel like I need to eat, then you listen to the doctor. But if it's the other way around, komash v'lon, that we say, lev yodea moras nafsho, the sick person knows himself better. And if the sick person says, I need to eat or else I'm going to die, I'm going to have a major problem over here, even I might die, so then we feed the sick person, even though the doctor that's present says he doesn't think that the sick person needs to eat. This is a good break point. We'll stop over here. With this, we conclude today's share.